Light shine in. Illuminate our inward view. Help us to see with clarity. That verse of "Winds, be still," which is a prayer, asks for inner illumination. A good beginning place here at the start of a new year. Good morning and happy new year to all of you. I'm grateful to be here with you in a place of beginning, to cross together a threshold in which the old year passes away and a new one emerges. From here, we can see out ahead that our family and friends will need us. Our work and gardens and cities and governments will need us. And we'll do what we can, as each of us is called, to serve what is just and true for the good of all. But in this place of crossover, I invite us to pause, to take a deep breath, to ground ourselves. In the midst of great mysteries that animate and sustain our lives, it's good to pray for inner illumination so that that light can clarify and fuel our next precious steps. Lee's beautiful opening, the poem Encounter by the poet Yahya Labadbidi, imagines an encounter between the speaker, the I in the poem, and what we might call the true self or the divine self, referred to in the poem as the longed-for self. Here is a bit of that poem again. I stirred in the small hours of the morning. Sensing a presence, I did not return to sleep. There by the balcony sat a familiar figure saying, "You've taken every detour to avoid me. For every step I've taken toward you, you've taken two back." The poet assumes that we know something about this division within ourselves. One part of us busy in the world, another part keeping watch, listening closely, and guided by means of an interior wisdom. "Try to remember me," this longed-for self says at the end of the poem, as though we could forget our true self, our divine self, which, of course, we can. When I was growing up, my mother used to say, "Kimberly, you're forgetting yourself," whenever she saw that I was doing too much, stretched too thin, or moving along paths that were not meant for me. I wasn't always sure I knew what she was calling me to. What was mine to do? How would I know? And as calm and knowing as her admonishment sounded, I don't think she knew who I was or what was mine to do. Not really. Perhaps it is as Labadbidi suggests, it takes the better part of a lifetime to draw closer and closer still to the truth of who we are, to remember ourselves. The poet John O'Donohue tells us that our hearts never forget. The heart, he says, is ever attentive to how we feel. It senses where the care, the joy, the fear, and the tenderness reside. The heart remembers who we are. I think that's true. I think it's true the heart remembers who we are. We pray or meditate to know our cares and joys and fears more truly, so that our lives will be directed by them in conscious and deliberate ways. This call to listen inwardly, to allow ourselves to be led by inner light, is woven through all the great stories from our UU wisdom sources, including Jewish and Christian narratives. I've always loved these stories for their larger-than-life characters, their plot complications, their poetry. Here's one. Perhaps some of you know it. It concerns the life of Samuel, who was a leader of ancient Israel and the first of the major prophets. But when we're first introduced to him, he's a boy in service to a temple priest named Eli. Samuel's work in the temple was probably a kind of housekeeping. Perhaps Eli had him sweep, run errands, keep the lamps lit, open the doors each morning. By serving the life of the temple in these ways, Samuel was learning the rituals of his community. But I like to imagine Eli not only supervising the work, but also teaching Samuel about their God and what it means to live a faithful life. The part of the story I want to share with you is set in the temple late at night, when Eli and Samuel are sleeping. Listen, come closer. Now Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim so that he could not see, was lying down in his room. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel too was sleeping. Then God called, "Samuel, Samuel," and Samuel said, "Here I am," and ran to Eli, saying, "Here I am, for you called me." But Eli said, "I did not call. Go, lie down again." So Samuel went and lay down, and then God called again, "Samuel." And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But Eli said, "I did not call you, my son. Go and lie down again." Now, Samuel did not know God, and the word of God had not yet been revealed to him. So God called Samuel again, a third time, and Samuel got up and went to Eli, saying, "Here I am, for you called me." Then Eli perceived that God was calling the boy. So Eli said to Samuel, "Go, lie down. And if God calls you, say, 'Speak, I am listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. And then God called as before, saying, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, for I am listening." And then God spoke to Samuel. As the story goes on, Samuel learns what God has planned for him, and God promises to guide and strengthen him, to help him become the trustworthy prophet that God is calling Samuel to be. I share this brief part of Samuel's story because it has wisdom for us here at the beginning of a new year, all these thousands of years later. You'll have noticed Samuel's eagerness to respond to the call of his name. Our eagerness to serve is valuable, a spiritual manifestation of our everyday devotions, our desire to belong, our care for the common good. I love this first part of the story, Samuel leaping to his feet out of a sound sleep and not sauntering, but running to his beloved elder Eli. He doesn't know what will be asked of him, but in his eagerness, we sense how he would respond to anything Eli asked of him. I like to hear his buoyant, "Here I am." And I like to hear it three ways. Here's the first way. "Here I am." As in, I am here in this place. We are here together, you and I. And "here I am." As in, I stand before you and offer who and what I am. Gifted and willing to share my gifts, limited and needing you and others. And lastly, "here I am," as in alive. Now, but not forever. In this last intonation of the words, there is a recognition that our time here is limited, even brief, so we do what we can, especially when we're called. We want to be of use. But every good story has humor as well as wisdom, and we can't help seeing the slapstick in Samuel's up-leaping tear into Eli's sleeping quarters, not just once, but three times, only to learn Eli hasn't called him at all. Samuel's eagerness has a slightly different cast in the light of Eli's patient but sleep-disturbed redirection. "I didn't call for you, Samuel. Go back to bed, Samuel." Seen this way, Samuel is that student I recall from my teaching days who was the first to raise her hand, the first to blurt the answer. She was the consummate volunteer, all longing to please, good manners, and cheer. There was a time I fit that description exactly. So this part of the story makes me smile, yes. Thank God for humor in sacred texts. But I understand Samuel's very human need for interpretation and direction. When something stirs in us that we don't fully understand, when we feel nudged or in some sense called, and are uncertain about how to respond, who among us doesn't seek out our elders, those whose long experience and powers of insight might help us discern what's unfolding in and around us? When Samuel hears the call of his name, he goes to his trusted teacher three times. And it is the older and wiser Eli who is able to say, finally, "When you next hear your name, don't say, 'Here I am.' Say instead, 'I am listening.'" We know from what follows that the next time God calls Samuel's name, he does not react. Samuel does not jump up. He does not run. He listens. There are a couple of wonderful things going on here, so let's draw a little closer to this part of the story. There's Eli's insight, yes, but also his humility. He perceives that God is speaking to Samuel, but he doesn't presume to know the inner life of this young man, nor what God's desire may be for him. Eli is saying to Samuel, "You have an interior life that is alive with God's longing for you. Go and listen, Samuel, and you will know your own life. life and its call more truly. This is also the moment in the story in which we understand that all our eagerness, all our willingness to serve, represented in Samuel, is potentially misplaced or wasted if we don't first discern its source and meaning before it can find its particular expression in right action. I like to imagine Samuel returning at last to the place where he slept to lie down and listen more closely, perhaps at first to the night's quiet, then to his slowed breathing, and finally to the beating of his own heart. He's more patient now, more open, maybe even a little afraid, because don't we all tremble before God's voice in us, that mysterious inner nudge toward greater authenticity, clarity, and purpose. And this brings me to my favorite part of the story. Come even closer. The God of the Hebrew Bible is resolute, trying again and again to get Samuel's attention. This is a God who waits for us, the listener, but not passively, not without trying as often as is necessary to break through and be known. What are the names we give to this voice that calls from time to time from within our own hearts, urging us in subtle or dramatic ways toward a deeper understanding of who we are and what we're given to be and do? Inner wisdom, conscience, true self, spirit. I won't say it doesn't matter, because I know that it does. I know the names that we give to inner direction has everything to do with what we hold most dear. But perhaps the name is not as important as the conscious practice of listening before responding, of drawing closer and closer still to our interior wisdom so that we do not spend ourselves carelessly. How easy it is to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, says the Trappist monk Thomas Merton, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything. This, he says, is a kind of violence if we're not grounded in what he calls the mysterious unity and integrity that is wisdom. Inexhaustible sweetness and purity, he says, that silence that is the fount of action and joy. This is at once, he adds, my own being, my own nature, and the gift of my Creator's thought and art within me, speaking as my sister wisdom. If Samuel's story is instructive for us all these millennia later, it's because we recognize ourselves in him, gifted and limited, longing to serve and needing help, and guided too by the voice of wisdom within us that says, this is your life. This is your path, and I am always with you. I'll close with an excerpt from the poem Closer by the spoken word artist Anish Mojani. I like to imagine these are the first words Samuel heard before he was called to serve in the larger world. And I like to imagine these are the first words we hear when we listen to the call of our own hearts, before we take up the work we discern is ours to do. come.